On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to try and answer these questions. Is Victor Wembanyama the biggest unicorn in NBA history? And you won't believe the answers to this question. Who is the best comp to Wemby? You won't believe the answers for that and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Big Number with Dan Devine. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and we are doing this every Thursday this season. Thanks for watching us on YouTube, listening to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And I appreciate it if you leave us a little five-star review, give us a subscribe, tell your friends, tell all your friends at the holiday parties and the family celebrations. The secret Santas, the elves on the shelves. Go tell those elves to go subscribe to The Big Number, where we do a deep dive on one big story in the NBA every Thursday. We're going to be off next week in light of Christmas, but we will be back after that. And we've got a really special one this episode that Dan, very excited about. How are you, Dan? What's up?
I'm doing well, man. We're all getting ready for holiday travel and holiday planning and everything. But before we get too focused on things that, you know, like the ephemeral stuff, like family and togetherness and joy, I just kind of want to put up some numbers, Tom. So I want you to tell me, what is today's big number? I'm guessing it's got to be gargantuan. It's got to be like in the thousands, maybe even in the millions. What's today's big number?
This week's big number is one, as in the number of players in NBA history who have averaged at least three threes made per game and three plus blocks per game. And three in the three-point column and in the block column. And that player is Victor Wembanyama.
So it's a big number because of how big he is. I get it.
Yeah. He's 7'4", I think, listed, but I don't believe it for a second. I think there's a big conspiracy to keep him under 7'5", whatever reason. The whole Kevin Durant, like he's not 7 feet tall. I think right. The same thing goes for Victor Wembanyama, who wants to insist that he's not 7'5". 7'4" sounds like, I don't know, more skilled than 7'5", maybe. I don't know. But the point is, he's very big, very large. His wingspan's very large. But there is a very small list of people in NBA history who is doing what he's doing this season, which is averaging 3 3-pointers per game and 3-plus blocks per game. And that is incredible. I mean, he is, Dan, like the unicorn of unicorns. And he is fulfilling that prophecy that when he came over from France, we were like, we've never seen anything like this guy. And this season, in his second year, age 20, he is doing something that's never been done in NBA history. There have been, Dan, 101 player seasons, according to stathead.com, 101 player seasons of players who have averaged at least three blocks in a game. There have been 149 player seasons in NBA history in which a player has averaged at least three made threes per game in a season. Those two lists have never converged. They have never overlapped. 101 players nuts. Over here, 149, and we have a little Venn diagram, the little overlap right there with Victor Wembanyama 2024-25 season. And look, the closest one who has averaged at least three threes per game, the highest number of blocks we've ever seen, is Karl-Anthony Towns a few years ago with Minnesota. He was averaging 1.2 blocks per game.
So like close, but not really that close.
No, not close. I mean, Victor Wembanyama is averaging 3.5 blocks per game, and the next highest blocking rate for a guy who's making this many threes was 1.2. So it's basically a third of what we're seeing from Wemby. So he is kind of in this zone that we've never seen before. And I'm bringing up Victor Wembanyama because the Spurs are 500. They're one of the most improved teams this year, thanks to Chris Paul, Stephen Castle, Devin Vassell's healthier. They're doing a lot better on both ends of the floor. But also, Victor Wembanyama is doing better in particular, his three-point shooting, his volume has skyrocketed. I think with the San Antonio Spurs being a 500 team and this new all-star format that is being announced where they're going to have 24 players divided up into three different teams for this round-robin tournament involving the Rising Stars, We are opening up the All-Star voting this Thursday when this comes out, December 19th. And Victor Wembanyama could be making his first All-Star appearance voted by the fans if there is, you know, the starters, but also the players can vote and the coaches can vote. So we might have a first-time All-Star in Victor Wembanyama. And also, he's going to make his Christmas Day debut against the New York Knicks noon on ABC. So two big things happening on the horizon for Wemby. So it feels like the time, Dan, to do a deep dive on Wemby and what the Spurs are doing this year. So, Dan, I'll just put it to you. I think he is the unicorn of unicorns. I think he's the biggest unicorn in NBA history, the true unicorn. What say you?
It would be pretty amazing if I was like, nah, actually, I don't think it's all that impressive. It's, you know, like, this kept me kind of whack watching him, actually. No, I mean, this is the when that wave sort of started to crest and it was, all right, you know, is Anthony Davis going to be that guy? Is Karl Anthony Towns going to be that guy? Kristaps Porzingis being like the tallest and the stretchiest of them. This was, it feels like all building to this point, right? And the ability, like the definition of unicorn when it was sort of set out there, I believe it was Kevin Durant said it first about Porzingis, and the way he was talking about it was, it's a guy who can block shots and a guy who can step out and space the floor at a high clip. And like, yeah, no one has done it to this degree at this volume. You know, we can quibble about accuracy. We can quibble about, you know, whether shooting it at volume, but shooting it at 33%, like what the value proposition is there for a guy who also like can stand 8 feet away from the rim and just put the ball in. Like it's, you know, so there's arguments to be had there. But in terms of skill and deployment, there's really no argument about it. And there's also nothing great to compare it to. And that's why I want to have a little bit of fun for a moment. There is a great website called craftednba.com.
Yes.
And yeah, there's a lot of different sort of tools and analytics on there. One of the fun things they've got is a player comparison tool, a like similar season finder. And you can plug in a player's name and you can choose different ages, different positions, different years from around the NBA. And I messed around a little bit on this. So if you cover a player's early 20s, so from age 20 to age 25, the most similar offensive player to Victor Wembanyama that it spits out is 1994 Penny Hardaway.
And we've got Lil Penny and now we have Big Penny. He's Big Penny. He's right. Big Penny.
Which honestly, not for nothing, guys, give me a little Vic in a Nike ad campaign. Like, come on, we're wasting money here, not doing it. We're going to be getting gold-plated 7-foot statues at this point if we just make this work. And the most similar player in that age group, again, early 20s, for on the defensive end, is peak Dwight Howard. So like 94 pre-injury Penny and peak Dwight Howard in one dude is kind of sickening, right? Like a very odd and an odd and weird combination of a guy where Penny is a huge ball handler, a combo guard who can create, and not an elite shooter, but like his whole game was, I'm creating from the perimeter facing up. And then Dwight Howard's whole game was, I'm one, maybe the one of the handful of best defensive players ever. So like that guy in one space, and then just get off of this quickly. If you move it out and go like, okay, well, what about when you get to your peak, like 26 yeah. to 30, you know, that sort of age range. First of all, it's like wild. The defensive end of it is all Ben Wallace and David Robinson. It's all them. So the peak of this is defensive player of the year every year, essentially. And then the offensive end is weird as hell. Here's your top five. Terry Cummings, Alvin Robertson, Mark Aguirre, Bonzi Wells, Dr. J.
No.
So, what this tells us is, I think, two things. One is there is no player who has kind of cohered all of the skills and production of a face-up perimeter guy and a perennial defensive player of the year in the same package to the degree we are seeing with Victor Wembanyama. And if you are asked, you're tasked with coming up with a comp, the smartest machines we got are going to shrug their shoulders and go, I don't know, man, the version of Josh Smith we all hoped we'd get. Like there's no real point of comparison, which I think lays your number out pretty well. This guy is one of one.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I love that. That is so good. Like I would love it if on the draft night we can go back and just be like, you know, he feels like a mix between Bonzi Wells and Ben Wallace, and just see heads explode. Like, everyone be like, what kind of right. alien, like literal alien, like what are you describing right now? I think he's like Terry Cummings on the offensive end and Dikembe Mutombo on the defensive end. And you're just like, what?
Bonkers.
So I think there's, we'll get into it, but I think there's a real discussion to be had about, is this the optimal usage of Victor Wembanyama offensively? Yeah. Because we did on the Kevin O'Connor show earlier, I lambasted Victor Wembanyama just about how his average distance, his shot distance was like 18 feet away from the basket. That can't be where you have a 7'5" guy spend most of his time is beyond the arc. But then promptly after that, Wemby went on this like rampage, like absolute peak Steph Curry flame throwing sessions for 5 games. And it just made me, again, look like a genius for saying he shouldn't shoot threes when he shot 41% on like 15 attempts per game. So let's talk about all of that in the next segment coming up. We're going to talk about the 4 little numbers that, Dan, you are going to put under that Christmas tree and deliver. And we're going to open those gifts up right after this break. Okay, Santa has gobbled up some cookies, washed it down with a glass of warm milk from Ben Stiller, I'm sure. Wait, that's in Happy Gilmore, right?
I was drowning there, my man. I was like, is that Reality Bites? Like, I forget which reference we're making,
but it's in Happy Gilmore when Ben Stiller is working at the retirement home, and he wants to give the mother asks for a tall glass of warm milk, and he says, "I'll give you a tall glass of shut the hell up."
That's right. Tall glass
with the handlebar mustache, you know?
That's exactly right. I mean, which he would bring back later for Dodgeball. Listen, guys, there's a lot of great movies out there on streaming you could check out with your family this holiday season. And if you don't want to do that, I don't know, maybe just drink a tall glass of shut the hell up. Tom, I'm here to give you 4 little numbers in support and service of our one big number, much like the entire San Antonio Spurs organization is in support of and surrounding Victor Wembanyama. Number one on your roster sheet as well. Big number, also the number on his chest. We're going to be seeing on Christmas Day. Here's our first little number, 9.9%. That is the share of opponents' 2-point shots that Victor Wembanyama has blocked through the first season and a half of his pro career in the NBA. That is on pace to be the second highest block rate of any player since the NBA started tracking blocks in 1973. I want you to take one wild guess who the leader in the pack is there.
Penny Hardaway.
Yep, 94 Penny. That's exactly right. This guy's a little bit different. Manute Bol. Another one of the gigantic skyscrapers, the late great Manute Bol, had blocked 10.2% of opponents' 2-point shots, but he played in an era where obviously there was much more congestion, much less spacing. And also he only played about 18.7 minutes per game for his career. So Wemby's getting starters minutes starting and being in the middle for the entire game. So, or as much of it as you can possibly get, as much as the Spurs can get him out there. What does having rim protection like that mean for a young team like this young Spurs still sort of building everything out? What does the fact that 1 out of every 10 shots is getting sent back do for the rest of that Spurs as they look to sort of build a defensive identity and cohesion?
Well, Dan, as you were talking about Manute Bol, it reminded me that like he was before his time. He really was.
Yeah.
He was slinging threes like Victor Wembanyama. Like, remember those deep threes where it was kind of this, it was seen like as a carnival game, a gimmick back then, like this guy slinging threes from 30 feet away. And like, he is number 7 on this list. So remember earlier when I talked about the most threes made per game for a guy averaging this many blocks, Victor Wembanyama's at 3 threes per game. Last year was 1.8. That's number 2 on the list. So the guy who is closest to this season, Victor Wembanyama, 3-point made per game is, of course, Victor Wembanyama, Wemby last year. Right. Jaren Jackson Jr. at number 3, Miles Turner at 4. That was in 2021. Andrew Kirilenko was 0.6 threes per game back in 2005, which is Inflation that's like probably like two threes right now based on the 3-point levels from 2005. And then you have at number seven, Manute Bol, 0.3 threes back in 1989 for the Golden State Warriors. So there you go. Is like Manute Bol, not just on the block rate as the most similar to Victor Wembanyama, but also kind of feel like he was a pioneer. RIP. Really miss Manute Bol. Yeah. I'm going to pull up some highlights here in a second. But like having that guy, not just that size, ability to block shots, but also the fitness of being able to play 35 minutes a game like Victor Wembanyama has been doing. And they've acknowledged that, yes, he is going to be more of a wing player offensively, but we're going to play him at the five. And, you know, he is a problem for guys like Rudy Gobert offensively, pulling Rudy Gobert outside the paint. And they did that in their December 14th game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, where they're trying to get Rudy out of the paint. But having Wemby just always there and lurking defensively and roaming is really, really essential to orient everybody else. You know, we talk about in the NBA, you know, who are the best perimeter defenders. And oftentimes when you talk to coaches and stuff, they'll be like, yeah, that guy's good at defense, like perimeter defense, but he's able to do a lot of those things because there's a guy behind him that is able to clean up a lot of the mess if he does get blown by. And so having Wemby, I think, unlocks not just like keeping guys out of the paint, but it also allows guys like Castle, Champagne, Chris Paul, Vassell, these guys to defend with a little bit more risk taking because they know, like, hey man, my insurance policy is that 7'5" French sensation right there. And so I think having that anchor is so essential. And he's not just blocking shots, he's deterring shots, which I think is the next level.
Absolutely. And the numbers on that are pretty glaring. When he's in the game, Spurs opponents only take about 31% of their shots at the basket. That would be like down near the bottom eighth of the league, like in terms of rim frequency. And when he's out of the game, it's up over 35%, which is up in the top, near the top 10. So like just the fact of him being there keeps them from attempting the shots, makes it more likely they're going to take mid-rangers or, you know, a contested three with a guy who can stay closer to his man on the perimeter. Because as you said, he knows Wemby's back there. And then when they actually get to the rim, they're only shooting like 45% when he's defending it, which is, you know, would be the league leader among guys who defend a lot of up close shots, if not for Isaiah Stewart. And I mean, how often have we said that turn of phrase? If not for Isaiah Stewart, Victor Wembanyama would be number one. But we live in a beef stew world, so Victor's going to have to deal with number two on that one.
Wait, is Wemby the next Isaiah Stewart? Is that what you're saying?
Well, he's going to have to start fighting some more people. So, but if he does, and also I don't know that we really want that, especially in this holiday season, a time of giving and kindness.
Can you imagine fighting Victor Wembanyama? Like you're always within our arm's reach.
That's right. You cannot get away from the reach. You go, that's why you got to get inside and go to the body, like Iron Mike Tyson taught
us. That's right.
But while you would need to get inside on Victor Wembanyama, he has spent an awful lot more time outside. Look at the segues that your boy is giving you. Number two on our little numbers here, Tom, 48.6. That is Victor Wembanyama's 3-point attempt rate this season. What that means is that nearly half of his shot attempts have come from beyond the arc. He's already got 8 games with more than 3-point makes. As you mentioned, there's only 20 players in the league that have done that. His 3-point rate has increased by more than 15% since his rookie season. He's taken a larger share of his shots from three than guys like Luka Doncic, Zach LaVine, Darius Garland, Desmond Bain, Michael Porter Jr., and Bradley Beal. You mentioned the grumbling you had earlier about in the season about, you know, is this the optimal use of him? Maybe a little bit less so now that he's been hitting like 38% of him for a while. What is your view on what that migration says about the way the Spurs see him, his development, what they kind of hope to achieve? Where do you come down on that big figure, 48.6% 3-point attempt rate?
Well, it's almost, you have to kind of view his season in like three parts. There's the first part in the first 10 games where he was really struggling to hit those shots, which opened the door for me to like go after him and say, you need to go inside. You need to get nastier. You need to be more, I think I call it, he needs to be more of an asshole. And then he's like, you want to see asshole? How about this? How about 13 threes per game at 41% three-point shooting? And just absurd. In the first 10 games, he was at 7 attempts per game and 28% shooting. And then after that, like, five-game stretch in November, he was kind of back to that earlier season, right? 7.8 attempts per game and making 29.8%. I say this all to say, take out that five-game sample, and he's averaging like 7.5 three-point attempts a game and shooting about 28% from three. So what do you believe? Do you believe it's the guy who went like scorched earth for a couple weeks, or is it, you know, somewhere in the middle? Or do you think he's kind of, he just got like uncharacteristically hot in that stretch? I think it's, I think what they're doing is trying to kind of explore here in the second season without going too extreme like the Sohan experiment last year. I think there's also another stat here I want to point out to your question. When he's on the floor with Chris Paul, okay, Victor Wembanyama is averaging 28 points per 75. When he's not playing with Chris Paul, he's averaging 23 points per 75. His three-point attempts per 100, I have it per 100 because I haven't done the math yet. Per 100, Victor Wembanyama is averaging 15 three-point attempts when he's playing with Chris Paul, and that falls to 10 when he's not playing with Chris Paul. So it's almost like, damn, when he's got this guy, Chris Paul, who's, you know, 40 years old, basically trying to find space into the defense, he's running a lot of pick and pop actions with CP, and he's popping out to the 3-point line in part because CP loves that mid-range area. It's not easy enough for him to scissor his way into the paint as he used to. And so I think a lot of this 3-point barrage that you're seeing for Victor Wembanyama is a function of playing with, you know, the point god, is that, you know, maybe if he had a little bit more zip or had a little bit more ability to get into the paint and attack like he used to, maybe you don't see this kind of spacing and picking and popping that you're seeing a lot this year. So I think there's that. I still, John Krolik, who, by the way, just opened up a new Substack, John Krolik, Krolik's Corner.
Oh, very good.
OG NBA writer. Krolik just, his first post is about how Victor Wembanyama's three-point rate, while impressive that he can shoot these threes, is kind of emblematic of this NBA that's falling in love with the three-point shot. Maybe he should tone it down a little bit. And I think, like, any sort of sound engineer for a band, you might have the best band members, and you might have the best musicians, but at the end of the day, you do have to be at the controls a little bit and figure out, you know, what is the right, you know, dialing it up or dialing it back. What is the right mix, the right sound mix here? Wemby, a little bit of, you know, change halfway through the season at the head coaching position with Mitch Johnson taking over. But I think a big part of this is, you know, Victor Wembanyama is trying to show that he is this skilled and that he can shoot from deep. It's just maybe pull back a little bit, because here's the names of guys that he's taken, made more threes than Fred VanVleet, Michael Porter Jr., Karl Anthony Towns, and Tyrese Maxey. He's made more threes than those four guys, which is in volume insane. It's really impressive. But when you point to his three-point percentage at 33%, feels like it might be a little too much. And that's what you've seen in the last six games, where he's dialed it back to about 7.8 attempts per game. Does that make sense to you? I think it is too many threes. The math says, like, he should be at the rim more, but it's a lot harder to get at the rim, and you need probably a lot more turnovers to get him to the rim, because it's a lot harder to get the ball down that low in an offense. And so, yeah, you can point to he's shooting 80% at the rim. You should be doing that every time down the floor, but probably comes with a lot of turnovers doing that in today's NBA. And so low turnover, I guess easier shot to get to, that three-point shot, is that three-pointer from Victor.
That's a good point. And I think the ecosystem point that you mentioned, where it's like he's maybe creating space for Chris Paul to get to his preferred spots, in the big picture of where the Spurs want to go, like, who is he probably going to be doing in that two-man dance with? It's Stephen Castle, right? And so, like, not necessarily at this stage in his development a knockdown shooter, not going to be a high volume pull-up shooter, somebody who's probably going to do his best work getting downhill. And, you know, we talked about the Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns two-man game a couple of weeks ago. We had talked about the Celtics and their five-out ecosystem. It's, I think you're probably right to point to this is a skill development and like we're playing in the sandbox a little bit to figure out how, when we are ready to win, like what's the best structure for our offense and how do we get guys individual development? Like the goal of that is going to be, can Victor Wembanyama be one of those, you know, high 30s kind of 3-point shooters on high volume to threaten the defense and then also open up that space underneath for driving lanes, for cuts, et cetera. And as you mentioned, Greg Popovich has been out since early November after suffering a minor stroke, reportedly intends to return to coaching at some point, but timeline TBD. What he'd said earlier in the season with Victor was, quote, he's more of a perimeter player than he is a post player. We want him to be able to do everything, isolate, shoot, do the whole deal. We just can't do it all at once, even if, you know, a guy like Victor makes you think that you should be able to have everything you want right now. Number three in our little numbers deals with a guy named CP3. The number is 55. That is how many assists Chris Paul has delivered to Victor Wembanyama this season. It is the sixth most connections of any pairing in the NBA this season, according to pbpstats.com. What has adding Chris Paul to the Spurs, you know, soup there meant for Wembanyama's development from where you're sitting? And is that overall offensive development for what the team is kind of hoping to become?
Well, first of all, this is kind of like, think about how long Chris Paul has had this career. I mean, he's now the second highest total of assists in the NBA. And he's played with Blake Griffin. He's played with James Harden. He's played with just about a ton of big men that are so dynamic, but nothing like this guy.
Sure.
Also, it's made Victor Wembanyama's shot type profile change playing next to CP. Last year, one of his top most frequent play types, according to Synergy Sports Sport Radar data, was pick and roll ball handler last year. Not doing that this year. You know why? Because he got CP3 over there, one of the best maestros in the pick and roll of all time. And you're seeing him be more of a screener this year, less of a post-up guy, more of an ISO guy. It's a different mix. And a lot of it is because CP is so good at orchestrating and organizing the offense and finding Wemby in the right spots. And a lot, and his pick and pop, especially, I mentioned it at the earlier, his pick and pop ratio is way higher this season than it was in last season. Last season, it was 45% of his scoring attempts after setting a screen in the pick and roll as the roll man. 45% was pick and pop, and the rest was going to the rim. This year, it's at 61% pick and pops, and it's way lower going to the rim. So Chris Paul has done something for Victor Wembanyama, is allowing him to shoot these threes, flex this kind of part of his game. I also think just the steadying effect offensively, they're still not an elite offense. I don't think they're going to get there until they get a couple more pieces on the floor. And Vassell, while he has returned, hasn't been prime Vassell that we've seen in the past yet. So I want to see more of those lineups. But Chris Paul and the 1-2 combo that you have with Victor Wembanyama has certainly been a nice tonic to a lot of the kind of Sohan, baby giraffe Victor Wembanyama last season, where it just felt like they didn't know exactly what they had in Wemby. And now there is some kind of like, you don't have to like squint to see what Wemby can become. CP has allowed them to kind of get better at organizing the offense, establishing an offensive identity. And yeah, like this season, they're 17th. They're about average offensively in offensive rating. I don't think they get there without Chris Paul this year. I think he's helped a lot of just the consistency, the professionalism, and the low turnovers. It certainly helped having CP, the point guard, out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you look at just the minutes where Wembanyama and Paul share the floor, there it's up at around a top 10 rate, right? Like this is what you were hoping to see, is like you get somebody who knows. And it's obviously not as simple as throw the big guy the ball. But sometimes it's not that, right? Yeah. Like there was a half the season last year where it just seemed like nobody on the Spurs could throw a lob. And Chris Paul solved that problem pretty amiably, pretty well. He actually has the, according to Cleaning the Glass, which the way that they evaluate minutes is to strip out garbage time. He's got the best on-court, off-court splits on the whole Spurs. Like the Spurs are 4 points per 100 possessions better than their opponents with CP3 on the court and minus 13.5 per 100 with them off it. So like even at age 39, even at 6 feet tall and all the minutes he's played, all the hand surgeries and everything else, Chris Paul gets on the court and you become a professional basketball team to a different degree than you used to be. And if you are trying to sketch out a future for this organization in terms where everybody knows what is expected of them and what they need to do and the right way to do it, you can think of a hell of a lot worse ways to do it than adding Chris Paul to the mix. That's going to bring us to our fourth and final little number this week, 64. And this is a pretty, it's not as little as one, but it's not that big. It's how many minutes Victor Wembanyama, Stephen Castle, and Devin Vassell have played together this season. So barely a game and a half, not even a game and a half of NBA basketball this season. Injuries have prevented them from getting everybody on the floor at the same time for much of the season. And it hasn't gone great. They're minus 44 in those 64 minutes. And the offense and defense have both been, let's charitably call them, a work in progress. But big picture, obviously, biggest, hugest dude there is in Victor Wembanyama as the, you know, baseline point of attack guy. Stephen Castle as a huge point of attack guard. Devin Vassell, 6'5", long limbs, big wingspan on the wing. It feels like this is the vision of what the Spurs want to be: positional size and length and versatility. And you can handle and you can handle and you can shoot and you can shoot. Ball, just big picture. What have you seen in the early going from Stephen Castle? And what do you think the Spurs kind of have going for them with this youth movement as they continue to sort of move from worst to, you know, competent to maybe contending?
Skill-wise, I think Castle has shown a lot of flashes that you're like really excited about this dude. I have added more stock or bought more stock in Castle's future than sold at this point. You know, I was big on him and entering the season, and he's only shooting 37% from the floor. And so some people would say, yeah, he's really struggling. I mean, I don't know. Like, he's got some elements to his game, finishing around the rim. His D cells, I think, is already above average. He's got that element to his game, and I love that about him. He's not shooting well, and I think that is, you know, one of those things that not a lot of guys. I mean, you look at Grady Dick or you look at Jalen Suggs. These guys are like the worst offensive players in the NBA there at rookie season. And look at them now. It takes time to put it all together. And for Castle, I don't think he's shooting 27% for the rest of his career. I think he's going to be much better than that. And I also think as a playmaker, he's already shown me a lot more than a lot of the guys in his class. And he's not a pure point guard. I was surprised that the number was that low, their plus minus in the 64 minutes that they played together, Dan. I thought it would be much better, honestly. But then you remember that Victor Wembanyama is not turning 21 until like 2 weeks from now. And Stephen Castle is a rookie who was dealing with injury and then is, you know, trying to find his way in a kind of, they had the coaching change with Pop and they're having new players. And he just turned 20 a couple weeks ago. So on one hand, I'm a little bummed that it's that low, the plus minus. But on the other side, it's like, yeah, that's what happens when you have a couple guys who are 20 years old.
Yeah, the small sample size alert is blaring over here. The red light's flashing for us on that one. And I would expect that to change dramatically. If in one real good or one positive, optimistic silver lining to that is a lot of the real struggles offensively for Stephen Castle can't have come when he's come off the bench. You know, it came especially earlier in the season before Jeremy Sochan got hurt and then Castle got elevated into the starting lineup. When he has come into the game as a reserve, 8 games off the bench, just 29% field goal percentage, 10.5% from 3-point range. In games where he's been a starter, not elite by any means, 40% from the field, 31% from three, but like there is maybe something to the notion of he's elevated in the structure. He's playing alongside Chris Paul. He's playing alongside better players when he's getting, you know, to run off the bench or off in the starting lineup rather. And he's able then to you know, develop, get a catcher's rhythm earlier, get the ball where he needs to have it to be successful at this point. You know, stack successes on top of one another there. And, you know, before you know it, I think you're probably going to have something pretty special on your hands. And yeah, it's like the easiest way to go from bad to pretty good in the NBA is don't suck on defense. And that's really hard to do with young guys. It's really hard to do with young guards at the point of attack. But having big dudes, positional size everywhere, makes it a lot easier. And if you're trying to build a good defense, you could do a hell of a lot worse than starting with 7'5" Victor Wembanyama, 6'6", 215 Stephen Castle at the point of attack, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan on the wing. Like, before you even get to guys like Julian Champagne, who've been real nice fit finds there, you know, bringing in Harrison Barnes as like a veteran, but also a big combo forward who can do some bang. Like, there's pieces here to elevate that defense, to elevate them on both ends of the floor, both for right now. Like, the Spurs are in a position where they're going to be contending. They keep sort of stay level here, contending for a play-in spot. And all of that seasoning, all of those reps, all those opportunities are only going to benefit guys like Wembanyama and Castle and Vassell and the rest of the crew in the long run.
Do you think he's been better this season than you expected, or about the same, or a little bit disappointed this season with Wemby?
It's a hard question to answer because what you expect is like, how do you even know what to expect with this? Like, we've never seen this thing, right? And I remember before last season, before he came into the league as a rookie, our editors at Yahoo Sports had asked me to write something kind of like level setting expectations. And I was like, I don't even know what you can expect here. Like, the pour a bucket of cold water on it was, he might not even be the second best number one overall pick center the Spurs have gotten, you know, because he's joining a franchise that previously had David Robinson and Tim Duncan.
Go Deeks.
And then he goes and, you know, outstrips every reasonable projection of what you could have asked him to be as a rookie. And so now holding that level of production pretty steady while expanding his game and playing more minutes on it and driving winning for a team that's 500 ahead of schedule. Like, maybe it's disappointing that he's not right out of the gate with like 29, 15, 5, and 5. But like, if we are finding ourselves disappointed by that, like, then A, I weep for the future of what, you know, what it could turn into when he actually starts meeting the expectations. And also, as you mentioned, you know, that might be us getting a little over our skis for a about to be 21-year-old leading a roster of many other 20, 21, 22-year-olds, you know, with a couple of graybeards along for the ride. So I think it's been difficult to, you know, to level set with some of those. What's the best use of him? Is it, you know, I understand the idea. It's the modern NBA and we've got to space the floor, but how could you possibly not play him more down there? But he's not, you know, Karl Malone. He's apparently much more like 94 Penny Hardaway. So you got to give that guy the ball on the perimeter and let him cook, I guess.
Last 12 games, he's averaging 28, 11, 5, and 3.
So I'm like underselling, dude. Yeah, it's
no,
it's,
but then you look at the first 9 games and it's not nearly as good. Like, the two sections of this game, it took a while. I was feeling I thought he was going to be the MVP this season. It was an aggressive hot take, but I kind of felt like the way he went through last season and just his iOS system was kind of upgrading, and software updates as the season progressed at a rate that I had never had seen. And I was a little disappointed the first like couple weeks of the season. I was like, maybe I just whiffed on that big time. And so far, he had a 5x5. He had a 50-point game. He's been turning it on. And over the last, you know, couple weeks, he's been on fire. So I do think that, like, it is important to remember that he's 20 years old and the best that he's going to play is in the rearview mirror. He's only going to get better from here. And so if he's going to continue to be 28, 11, 5, and 3, that's going to be a success. And I think he is going to be his first time All-Star. Mobley has a chance. Şengün, Cade Cunningham, Derek White, Franz Wagner injured, obviously, but these are all first-time All-Star candidates, and I think Victor Wembanyama will end up going to his first All-Star just after his 21st birthday, so he can celebrate legally. I don't even know if he would do like I don't know. I'll leave that. Point being, we've got some more over-unders to do here. Update the scoreboard from the season right after this break. Okay, Dan, so we're going to do some over-unders here. Update on the scoreboard. You know, Tuesday night, OKC did not do very well after I proclaimed them as the best candidate to be America's team. That's what happens, I guess, is, you know, you write the very strong column and you look like an idiot right afterwards. But one of the things that has not been part of this kind of vapor of the NBA Cup is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's free throw totals have increased to the point where he is now 8.2 free throw attempts per game, which means that your under there gets a little nixed and it flips to over, which is what I projected, which means that the tie has been broken from last week. I am at 13 correct over unders for the season and you are at 11. As well, not just the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander flip, but Derek White's true shooting percentage went above 62%, which is where the line was. We both kind of, sorry, Derek White and his father, we both took the under on that, and now he's at 62.2%. So take that, Tom and Dan. nicely done, Derek. So now it's 13 to 11. We should update with a couple more over-unders here in the theme of Victor Wembanyama going forward. Danny, you ready to hear the new over-unders to add to this total here?
Absolutely. Let's get to it.
All right. First one, we'll do two. First one, Victor Wembanyama, three-pointers made per game. He's at 3.0 right now. And you know what? I'll set the over-under line at 3.0. Do you think that he is going to maintain? Is he going to make more threes? And part of that is like baking in how many more attempts is he going to have if he does shoot 33%. So what do you say? Three made three-pointers per game, over under. What say you, Dan?
I think that as we get through the rest of the season, it's not just going to be that his iOS is updating. It's going to be like his iOS is on ayahuasca. It's just going to keep distorting into wild categories, and things that we previously thought unthinkable are going to come to pass. He might make four a game. I don't know. I'm going over. I feel like he is the last person that I should be putting any kind of governor under on. So I think you're absolutely right to point to the attempts. If we're talking about it is in the plans for him to take 9 or 10 a game, which it certainly seems like is the idea at this stage. And he warms up, as you know, you mentioned he can get hot. I'm going to go the over on it. It feels unfathomable that seems reasonable to me. And yet here we are.
I'm going to take the under. And I feel like I'm contradicting
myself. The ayahuasca thing for you. Not so much that for you. I didn't sell you with that one.
You should have sold it to me a little earlier. Maybe if I had taken some ayahuasca or gone into a jungle and done a trip and come out thinking, you know what? More than 3 three-pointers for Victor Wembanyama. I'm actually going to go under on this. And I think part of it is that Chris Paul element is, do we think that he's going to play all 82 games this year? I think there's going to be a time where CP is either going to take some times off or he's going to be banged up a little bit and wants to take a couple games off here. And you're going to see kind of ISO Wemby try to play more as a power guy than the pick and pop guy with CP. So I think a lot of this is, also, outside of that 5-game sample, he's averaging about 7.5 three-point attempts per game. And so I guess if I'm being selective and choosing the points that I want to focus on, I'm going to go with the under, where he's averaging about 2 three-pointers made in that 16-game sample. So I'm going to go under on 3 three-pointers for Victor Wembanyama. We'll go with 5x5s for the rest, or 5x5s total on the season. I was thinking maybe he'd have a handful of these by now this season. I'm going to set the over-under at 2.5 5x5s total this season. He's already had one. So basically, I'm just saying to you, Dan, do you think he's going to get a couple more of these 5x5s? I'm going to set the over-under, total over-under on a 5x5s. That's 5 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 5 blocks, 5 steals, at least 5 in those 5 columns. He's done it once this season. Do you think he's going to get it a couple more times the rest of the way, setting the over-under at 2.5?
Yeah, I'm going to go heavy on the over on this one. I don't know if it's going to be like, you know, 5 or 6 of them, but I think 2 is going to happen. I think you're starting from a position of a double-double every night. He is blocking, has as many 4-plus block games as anybody in the league, or more than anybody in the league, except maybe Walker Kessler. He might also be up there, but you're starting from a position, and he's averaging 4 assists a game, or just under 4 assists a game. So you are starting from a position that is basically the steals column away from being close every night. Mm-hmm. And it's given how devastating he can be, and how it's like a feedback loop. This turnover turns into that assist. This turnover turns into that run the floor and be the trailer and get the bucket. Like, it just seems to me that there's going to be two more opportunities for him to put his imprint on the game in that way. And also, it's fun to root for the over on something like this, because the 5x5 is a weird, cool, rare thing. There have not been very many of them in NBA history, and the players that have done it a lot and or even done it once are cool and weird. And then, like, as you're going through this, you're like, oh man, there's Andre Kirilenko, and there's Yusuf Nurkic, and there's Julius Erving. Yeah. All guys we've brought up, by the way, except for Nurk, but guys we've brought up in this conversation about how you try to figure out what Victor Wembanyama is. More of that, please. I'm going with the over.
I'm hoping that we get a little bit more 5x5s from
I want to be very clear. I have sold neither hopium nor ayahuasca. I'm not selling anything. You know, don't come to me looking for 2-for-5s. I got nothing for you. If anybody's listening, stop listening. I'm not. All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. But if you want to do some Jack Black karaoke, you're going to be handing those out, I'm sure, over the holidays.
That's exactly right.
After some of that eggnog from the family tub.
Right.
Listen, I'm going over.
Family tub. That's what they call me.
Yeah, the eggnog tub. The over on 2.5. I'm taking the over. Isn't it weird that the column that is hardest for him to get the 5x5 is not assists, but it's steals? I thought it would be assists, but no. The guy is a playmaker already. I mean, some of the turnovers, you know, he's trying to do too much out there, but he's got so much skill when it comes to, like, delivering passes that, you know, Stretch Armstrong or Inspector Gadget could only do. And I feel like that's, you know, Dan, like, that's surprising to me that he hasn't had more steals this season. But I'm going to go with the over here. 2.5. Maybe I should have put it at 3.5. Anyway, that's it for the show this week. Please enjoy the holidays. Please be safe and responsible. But please hug your loved ones and your friends. And please download and subscribe, rate and review this podcast, and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't done that already. I want to thank Joe and the entire squad that works very hard behind the scenes to make this podcast a reality. So again, please watch and subscribe to The Big Number, not just on audio platforms, but also on YouTube. That's a big help. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another edition of The Big Number. Until then, please be safe and please have a great time and enjoy the holidays.
Don't sell ayahuasca.